You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome back to The Wire. Tamaki Makaurau's Mayor Wayne Brown has proposed cutting two-thirds of funding for environmental programs across the city. This includes funding for stormwater and water quality upgrades, as well as environmental work. The announcement comes on the heels of recent flooding and Cyclone Gabrielle. Auckland Central's MP Chloe Swarbrick has launched a petition against Wayne Brown's proposal, which currently sits at around 6,600 signatures. I spoke with her about the council's climate budget and appropriate climate action, and started by asking her what exactly the council is planning to do with the climate budget.
Basically, as succinctly as possible, every single year there is what's called a mayoral proposal that goes out to the public for consultation to then form the basis of the council's budget. That is kind of the spending that it has allocated, but also the rates that, you know, people who own homes pay, but also renters pay by virtue of the fact that the people who they are paying their rent to then pay those rates. So all renters are also ratepayers. What we had announced initially in December last year was a range of potential cuts. People may remember that at that point in time, there was light shed on particularly the proposed cuts to arts and cultural spending. There's also been, importantly, some campaigning around the proposed cuts to the Citizens Advice Bureau, for example, but also within that proposal in December was a proposal to cut around two-thirds of the funding sources for environmental and climate programs. So that includes also water infrastructure. And what we're seeing now is that Auckland Council is going through a process of basically finalising what will go out to consultation for the public. So we're actually expecting that on Tuesday, the 28th of February, tomorrow from the day that we're recording this, that we will see the final details on those proposals. So I had actually already been within our Auckland Central office preparing a kind of submissions guide for people for when that consultation goes out and goes live. I thought that originally it was just going to be this really pointy-headed, nerdy thing that all of us who are really interested in local government policy would be engaged in. But obviously, in light of the floods and the calls for climate action and the very tangible, immediate, first-hand experience that people have with that lack of investment in infrastructure, that's where kind of the idea for the petition and kind of garnering that immediate understanding of what was coming down the pipeline was really important.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's important that we don't see a cut in climate change funding for Auckland environmental programs?
Because the climate emergency is here. Look, I have been trying for 5 years in this gig to figure out how, in a calm and rational and fact and evidence-based manner, we discuss and debate and talk about the science of climate change. And while we've managed to get, obviously, some critical political movement, it is nowhere near enough to meet the challenge of the science. You cannot negotiate with chemistry or with physics. You can, however, negotiate with and obviously make amendments to the way that we think about economics and the way that we think about the kind of spending and investment that we have to make. All of us are pretty familiar with at least the rhetoric that we have seen decades of underinvestment in our infrastructure, particularly in our water facilities. And, you know, that's part of the rationale behind the Three Waters amalgamation and the much controversy and misunderstanding that's occurred therein. So the reason that it's really important that we don't see this funding cut is because we are literally in a climate emergency. Auckland Council declared that in 2019, but to date we haven't seen anywhere near enough of them putting their money where their mouth is. But worse than that, under the current administration, we literally have proposals for cuts, not only to mitigation projects, but also to adaptation.
Mm-hmm. What do you propose for an ideal climate change budget for the city?
Oh man, it would look radically different to what we have currently in front of us. I mean, and this is the really gutting thing about a lot of the way that politics operates, right? We tend to, and what I feel like a lot of my job is basically harm minimization. There's this proposal for really terrible things to happen and we're saying, let's stop that thing. But what we should be having a conversation about is the vision that we have for actually a climate resilient city. And if we were having that conversation, we would be discussing daylighting our streams, protecting and restoring our wetlands, planting planting more native trees, which is really important for retention of soil and preventing some of those slips that we'd seen. And also with regard to the daylighting streams and the wetlands, obviously, for absorption, which kind of lends itself to a sponge city, the likes of what we've seen in Singapore, for example. And we also can do density really well because, you know, having engaged with many people across the city as the flooding and the cyclone has hit and the kind of recovery process, what's become really clear is that where we have built houses where they're supposed to be built and also where we have done density in a good way, that people haven't been impacted as hard as others who are living in, for example, lower lying areas or dips have been. So that's kind of the vision, and we can do that stuff. The Greens have proposed this stuff for, you know, 20 plus years now. And what I'm hoping is that with the awfulness of this trauma and this tragedy that all of us have been through, is that we really actually realize how the consequences that we are experiencing right now are a result of political inertia and inaction for decades. And if we can accept that really gutting and unfortunate reality, well, we can come to realize that different political decisions can be made right now, and we can make that investment right now.
What are your hopes for the petition on a wider scale?
So the point of kind of political petitions is twofold. One of them is to raise awareness so that people know what's happening there, and obviously so that we get to facilitate conversations like the one that we're having right now. And then people kind of obviously at a headline level can see that these things are happening and then seek to engage a little bit more. So it kind of galvanizes a bit of a campaign around the issue, and it helps to facilitate these conversations where people otherwise might not know that these things are happening. The second, and often not necessarily understood part of a petition, and one of my favourite things being a nerd about the parliamentary and political process, is that when we submit this petition, there are a range of other options that flow from that, not the least that, for example, when tabling it at Parliament, that we then trigger ministries associated with the issue to come and to present and to unpack the issue further. And then there is a parliamentary process to also create further discussion and information and evidence gathering for this issue.
What do you think the relation is between the council and the government in terms of responsibility towards climate change response?
Really good question. So here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, we don't operate with what's called a supreme codified constitution. That means that we operate under a system known as parliamentary supremacy or parliamentary sovereignty. What that means is that our local government is created by legislation. It doesn't have its own kind of constitutional standing, which means that it is totally vulnerable to any given government of the day deciding to, for example, as the former national government did, removing what are called the four wellbeings from the legislation. So the kind of mandate that local government previously had for consideration of not only the economic welfare, but also the social, the cultural and the environmental welfare of the cities and the areas and the regions that they are supposedly charged with looking after. We very evidently have a democratic deficit at a local government level. So here in Tāmaki Makaurau, we frequently have local body elections with a turnout of less than 35%. Compare that to our general election turnouts, which usually are between 75 and 85%, which is really high internationally for a jurisdiction that doesn't have compulsory voting like they do in Australia. So on that kind of democratic deficit point, I think that we can start to unpack why it is that we see a lot of the policies that we see from successive local government authorities that have been focused on keeping rates low and therefore not investing in the likes of this infrastructure because of the way that the local government voting process is facilitated with postal ballots, which obviously disproportionately benefit people who are in their homes for, longer than 3 years at a time. I've spoken to many people who rent or are in flats who just receive stacks of these postal voting papers, and you know, then there's all of the challenges of where you go to vote, who's actually running, and all of those are the moving parts. We also have the massive issue with the resourcing of local government. And this is one of the discussions that both myself and the Honourable Eugenie Sage, who's a Green MP, actually the Chair of Environment Select Committee this term, but also was the Associate Environment Minister last term. When we were kind of sitting down with the Honourable Nanaia Mahuta at the start of the Three Waters process, when they were looking at scoping up the project, we could agree that the definition of the problem is correct, that we have massive infrastructural deficit when it comes to water services in this country. But the Greens' kind of proposition was, and you'll see this reflected in our third reading speech and obviously how we ended up voting against the final iteration of the legislation for Three Waters, not for the racist and awful reasons that others were pitching, but because of the fact that actually this issue can also be resolved from empowering and resourcing local government properly. So in the OECD, the average amount of spending that occurs at a local government level, if you look at it proportionally between local and central government, is approximately 30% at a local government level. Here in Aotearoa, it's less than half of that at 11%. And that's where you can start to see that with local government only really having the lever of rates, but also being disincentivized to do that by virtue of the kinds of people who do end up voting in local government elections, that we have this impossible situation where unless we radically change the way that people engage with local government and therefore the representation that we get and the incentive structure that they have to do this stuff, yeah, then we're not going to solve those structural issues. So to the core of your question, where does the responsibility lie? Central government has to really actually stop using local government as a whipping boy and to create the proper structures for local government to do the stuff properly.
And do you think there's a lack of information available to people, and particularly younger people, voting in council in elections?
110%, yeah, massively. Yeah, and you can get it. We have, you know, a mainstream media that kind of operates inside of this kind of late capitalist model of how you have to effectively produce infotainment because you're chasing advertisers and all the rest. And that means that we end up with this boiling down of very complex issues to sound bites and headlines and all the rest, and controversy gets cut through, et cetera, et cetera. And we have our elections, for example, even our general elections, represented in quite a presidential style where people are thinking about who they're going to vote for prime minister. Nobody actually has a vote for prime minister. We vote for parties because we operate in an MMP environment, which we instituted over 20 years ago. But I think that if you apply that same lens and that lack of kind of critical understanding and unpacking of complex issues, which I think is really gutting because I very strongly believe that New Zealanders are far smarter than they're given credit for, you end up with obviously people not really getting what's going on in local government elections because everybody is also exhausted because, again, of all of those pressures that we have under our current economic system too.
What do you think is most important for Tamaki Makaurau in the face of severe weather events such as the flooding and recent Cyclone Gabrielle?
So we have to do climate adaptation and mitigation. And for the uninitiated, climate adaptation is largely understood to be how do we change our city or transform our city in such a way that we deal with or create a resilience to the already climate changed environment. So noting that we are, and we already know that we've baked in more extreme weather events by virtue of being at 1.1 degrees of global warming. Mitigation is about how do we stop going to 1.2, 1.3, all the way up to 1.5 degrees. And 1.5 is the tipping point that, you know, internationally, our lives will be irrevocably changed and we end up with some really awful feedback loops, which we're already starting to see the beginnings of. We have to do both of those things because you can't adapt to a fundamentally unlivable climate. So we also have to bring down those climate changing emissions. The really cool thing about doing genuine climate adaptation is that it also is mitigation. And what I mean by that is that nationally, our fastest growing emissions profile is transport. At a city level in Tamaki Makaurau, our emissions profile looks quite different to the rest of the country, which we're, you know, half of our emissions are agricultural. In Tamaki Makaurau, half of our emissions are transport. So when you think about how we can mitigate those emissions, that means stopping, forcing and producing car dependency. And that's where the idea of 15-minute cities, rapid transit networks, walking and cycling, density done well and otherwise becomes not only climate adaptation, but also mitigation, and has the huge co-benefit of people living healthier lives, more connected to their communities and more secure housing.
And where can people find the petition if they're wanting to sign it?
It's available on, I think, my social media. Also, it'll be on the Greens website, greens.org.nz. And you can also Google it. But yeah, I would highly encourage people who are interested in this not only to sign the petition, but also when the consultation comes out for the budget to submit on it. Because local government, under the Local Government Act, is actually required to give greater credence to submissions from the public than unfortunately, our parliament is. So there is actually real benefit in people submitting, because as folks may have seen in some of the coverage, particularly in our newspapers in the past, about the kinds of budgets that local governments have passed, they regularly refer to the raw data of how many people are submitting for and against a budget proposal. The key takeaway is don't leave politics to the politicians, because they've let us down for so long.
That was Chloe Swarbrick, member of the Green Party and MP for Auckland Central, chatting about the Greens' petition against Wayne Brown's climate budget slashes.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.